Well, obviously, I'm not a youth now. I was at one point in time. That's also obvious. But I joined this Hare Krishna movement in my youth, when I was 18 years old. And my experiences prior to that led me up to joining this. Especially seeing the emptiness, uselessness, and insubstantiality of the materialistic civilization in which I was raised. And now you're also raised in the same kind of, maybe more so. You're probably, in many ways, in your youth, you're in a more, in many ways, a more materialistic atmosphere than I was raised in. Because among the Indian youth, the pressure and the competition for material advancement, get money, be a success, is stronger than it was. I mean, and when I was a kid, that means from about the age of 8 or 9, I became, you know, that's the age when you start to become aware that of the world around you more. And from that was about the time that, that was about the time that Srila Prabhupada was going to, when Srila Prabhupada came to the West and started this Hare Krishna movement. And already at that time, in America and in Europe, in not all of Europe, among the youth there was a revolt against the materialistic civilization. That was the, manifested as the hippie movement. Before that, there'd been in the beatnik movement, and then there was a mass hippie movement. So I grew up, came into my teens when that was there, and there was a widespread feeling among many young people that civilization is wrong, we're off course, and what's the use of getting all this money and this and that. That hasn't happened in India yet. People are still, you know, they've got dollar signs in their eyes. About 2 years ago, I was called to a school in Vishakhapatnam. And speaking to a class, I guess the average age was about 15 or 16. So I asked them, what is your goal of life? And one boy stood up and said, to go to America. And so I asked him why. He said, because here, if you work, you earn an average of so many rupees, and in America, you earn an average of so many dollars, and the rate of the dollar to the rupee, and he said like the exact rate of what it was at the on the 43.65 or something. Now it's gone down. So, I mean, he was quite open about it, that I want to earn money and be rich. But by the time of our generation, there were many people, many of the youth were disaffected with that, and they thought, that, what's the use, what's the point? Because we'd seen our parents' generation go through all of that, and they were miserable. And that's what I thought, that's exactly what I thought. Why should I follow this, the same way of life in which everyone's miserable, and why should I just follow it? Of course, your background is somewhat different because you do have access to this Krishna consciousness, which is it's genuine spiritual alternative. As a matter of fact, when we understand what Krishna consciousness is, we don't think it's an alternative. We understand that, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, materialistic life is just like a hole that people pass stool into. So it's not really an alternative. Yeah, it's not take it or leave it, it's just take it. I mean, if we really understand what Krishna consciousness is, it's not take it or leave it, we have to take it. So there's some difference there. Anyway, I can just relate one or two anecdotes from my school life. Even now when I think of my school life, I think I'm so happy I joined this Krishna consciousness movement. That one of the subjects I was studying was sociology. And any of you study sociology? It's an extremely boring subject. I mean more than others. They're all boring, but some are more boring than others. They're just talking about ordinary life, but they use all these big long words. So in the class, we were sitting there in the class, I said to the teacher, actually, this is all rubbish. And he agreed. He said, it's true. They were talking about these fishermen who they come back from, they go out for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, they come back, they get drunk for a few days, and then they go back to sea. And what do you want to study that for? What's the value of studying that? So he agreed. He said, yes, but you have to study it to get your, to pass your exam. Then another teacher told me, which we already knew anyway, the moment you leave this school, you can forget 99% of everything you studied. It won't make any difference in your life whatsoever. You just need to pass the exam. That's all. And then when I decided I didn't want to go to university, and everyone was telling me, well, you'll really regret it if you never go to, you'll really regret it if you don't, in future, if you don't go to university. Well, I never regretted it. And many people ask me, which university you go to? I've been to so many universities. Not to study, but to teach. I never studied, but I teach. I gave so many lectures in so many universities. So they were all trying to convince me I should go to university. And then I was already convinced I didn't want to go. But then when the final thing that fully 100% convinced me not to go was when one teacher said, well, at least you don't have to work for 3 years. If you can get an easy course and just fool around and just, you know, have fun for 3 years. And I thought, why do I want to waste my time? If that's the best reason you can say for going to university, just waste your time for 3 years, then why bother? Well, that's definitely a reason not to go, because there's nothing better to do. So I was quite convinced of the insubstantiality of everything in the material world that there is to offer. And when I came in contact with why I have this book sitting in front of me, because I wanted to read from this, Srimad Bhagavatam, after being forced to read all kinds of rubbish things in the school, I finally found something that was worth reading when I came across Srila Prabhupada's books, that everything else I'd read previous to that, like I say, insubstantiality, there's nothing really there. It seems like it should be. It's presented as if it's important, but there's nothing actually of any value there. Then we read Prabhupada's books. You have to apply your mind to listen to this. This is not a cartoon book. It's not a Tom and Jerry. So you have to think. It's intellectually challenging. But it's more than just it's not empty intellectualism. It's not intellectual just for the sake of showing off. I'm a big brain. That's useless intellectualism. But this Srimad Bhagavatam gives subject matter which is the actual point of human intelligence is to apply the intelligence to understand this. In human life, there is more intelligence than the dogs and the cats. You might have noticed sometimes. It's not always obvious, but sometimes it seems like that. So, human intelligence is meant for understanding this. And if we don't try to understand this, then we're simply dogs and cats. So, what is this so wonderful subject matter? Please try to understand. It's not easy to understand, but it's not impossible also. So this is the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. There are 12 cantos. This is the first canto with purports. It's all, you know, it's not something just to, it's not like a novel. You pick it up and read it and while you're stuck in the traffic jam, and then you throw it away. But this is something we can read again and again and again. And every time we read it, we will find more and more how it is profound. This is exactly the correct word. Profound. Who knows? Who can say what profound means?
Deep.
No, this is a youth class. You're too late. You came 50 years too late. It's, of course, everyone's welcome, but we're asking the youth. Profound. It's probably not a word you use much because there's nothing profound in modern life. It's not exactly clear. If it's profound, actually it may appear to be, if it's profound it should be clear, but it may appear to be unclear. All right, that made it more difficult to understand. Profound, a simple translation of this is deep, philosophically deep. And not just philosophically, but emotionally, intellectually. We are all destined to die. That is, you could say that is a profound statement. It lifts us, it's a statement which lifts us from our ordinary level of triviality. Ordinarily everything we do and say, it's concerned with triviality. You all know what that means. Trivial, what is trivial? Is light. Light, insubstantial. Means like halka, faltu, something like that. Meaningless. Meaningless, or very little meaning. All right, so let's read this. The first verse, it's profound, very deep. It's so, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadhyasya Yaton Vaya Ditratas Chate Svabhigna Swarat Tene Brahma Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye Muhyanti Yat Suryaha Tejo Vari Mridang Yatha Vinimayo Yatra Trisago Mrsha Dhamna Swena Sada Nirasta Kuhakam Satyang Parang Dhimahi. All right, show the translation on the screen. Every word of this is full of so much meaning. All right, so shall we read it together? Please read it. Oh my Lord, Sri Krishna, Son of Vasudev, oh all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji. Please don't walk in front of the screen. The original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed in illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. So, everyone understood? It's not so easy, is it? But it's worth understanding. In fact, understanding this is the only purpose of human life. Every word is full of so much meaning. All right, that's the first verse. That's enough to keep us occupied for many lifetimes, at least this lifetime. And let's go on to verse 2. I'm just giving you an idea. All right. Dharma projita kaitavo atra paramo nirmatsaranang satam Vedyang vasavam atravastu shivadang tapa trayon mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kingva Parayar Ishvaraha Sadyo Hridyavarudhyate Chakritipis Susrushubhis Tatkshanat. All right, translation. Let's read it together again. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavata Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality, distinguished from illusion, for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears this message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. Verse 3. Got it? Nigama kalpataro galitang palang shukamakhadamrita dravasangyatam pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam mahuraho rasikabhuvibhavukaha. In translation, O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadev Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. I'm not reading the purports. The purport to verse 1 is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and a half pages, just to give some explanation. Well, personally, I feel very enlivened by reading this, even though I've read it maybe hundreds of times. Usually when you read something again and again, it becomes kind of boring, doesn't it? What books have you read that you enjoyed reading? Any books? Are you embarrassed to say, or what? What are some famous books? Harry Potter. I haven't read it, and I have no intention of ever reading it. It's just imagination. This is reality. So, if you read Harry Potter, imagine if you had to read one volume of Harry Potter every day for the rest of your life. That was your job, just to read one volume every day. You think after 30 years you'd be like, wow, I really want to read it. You'd be like bored, absolutely. Isn't it? Whatever book it is. But this doesn't become boring, which proves that it's a spiritual literature. It's of a different quality. It doesn't become boring. It never becomes boring. The more you read it and study it and think about it, the more you become enlivened about it. Because this is adhyatmic. It's connected. It's directly connected with the soul. Harry Potter is connected, or any whatever it may be, is connected with the mind and the emotions and maybe a little bit of intelligence somewhere. But this is directly connected with the soul. So this is always enlivening, something you can always feel enlivened about. The materialistic civilization is concerned with trying to make everyone enthusiastic. Get work hard and then you can earn money and you can drive have a really fast car which can go 240 kilometers an hour, not in the Dubai traffic jam. You get stuck in however good your car is, you're stuck in the traffic jam. You know what's best for the Dubai traffic jam? It's a motorbike, or just walk, even better. So, of course, that's very dangerous also. But whatever it is, they're always trying to enliven you. Pepsi Cola, drink Pepsi Cola, and they show the advertisement, and everyone's looking really excited. But when you drink it, it doesn't do that. However many you drink. And if you drink more and more Pepsi Colas, then it becomes dangerous. They had a Coca-Cola drinking competition at Delhi University, and the one who drank it, drunk the most, afterwards he collapsed and was taken to hospital for having too much carbon dioxide in his system. So, you see, even Coca-Cola can be dangerous. So whatever it is, the idea, you know, listen to this rock music, and it's supposed to enliven you. But if you listen to the same tune over and over again, you're going to get really fed up of it, isn't it? What? No? No. You don't think so? Okay, try it. I challenge you. Get your favorite song, stick it on, and listen to it nonstop for 24 hours. And see if you still like it. See if you ever want to listen to it ever again in your life. It only has appeal because it's of its apparent freshness. But if you listen to it over and over again, then you don't... That's why they have Top of the Pops. They have that in the... That's in England. They have this Top of the Pops. And it's always changing. Something's number one for 3 weeks, and then something else comes in, and then it goes out again. And then they have a blast from the past, because when you forget it, and then again they play it, oh, that sounds good, yeah, I remember that. But if you don't play it all the time, because you get fed up of it, and you have to have something different. But this is of a different quality, because we read it and hear it and relish it again and again and again. Now, the thing is, with material emotions, you have to have something new to try and get some sensation out of it, because it's only on the surface level. It's only very shallow. So you have to keep on changing it. But with spiritual subject matter, because it goes right into the soul, so the spiritual emotions are developed. It's not that it doesn't become boring, because what happens at the spiritual level in our relationship with Krishna, there's rasa, which means there are all kinds of different spiritual emotions which are becoming enlivened. So even though Krishna Leela, it's a fairly simple story. I mean, a boy gets born, and then he's born in a prison, and then gets carried over the river to Gokul, and he grows up and he kills a few people, and then he dances with the gopis, and like this. From the point of view of a story, Krishna Leela, it's maybe not very exciting, even compared to Ram Leela. That's an exciting story, isn't it? But then compared to, you know, like, you know, the rise and fall of the Roman Empire or Harry Potter, it's maybe not very interesting. But one thing's for sure, when Harry Potter is completely forgotten and there's no trace of any Harry Potter in the whole of human civilization, there's still going to be people chanting Hare Krishna. Because Krishna is real and Harry Potter isn't. Krishna is real in the realist sense. Means that he is not a historical figure from the past. Krishna is present right now. And our relationship with Krishna, that is the... Please come inside. Get a way to come. That is what really matters. Everything else is fragile and temporary. So please try to understand this. Youth is a time for making decisions which will affect your whole life. So please try to understand what is actually beneficial for you in the deepest, in the most profound sense of the term. See, I taught you a word today, profound. Human life is not meant for being shallow, superficial. Hi, how are you doing? Whoa. And already the person's already, he says, "Hi, how are you doing?" And before you can give an answer, he's already, you know, 100 meters down the road. He doesn't care how you're doing. It's just, "How are you doing?" You just say that, but you don't care really how they're doing. So, superficial. Everyone's too busy to care about anyone else. They only care about me. I, me, and mine. Krishna consciousness means to stop getting carried away by all the glitter, the tinsel, the noise, the propaganda of modern life, which everything is at very great speed. Just stop. Think, who am I? Where am I going? What is the real purpose of life? What do I really want in life? What is the real value of life? If I become as rich as Bill Gates, or as powerful as George Bush, or as beautiful as whoever's the latest Bollywood film star. Who's the latest? They're all, you know, all the ones I heard of, they're all finished now. And even if you become as popular as Shah Rukh Khan, what have they got? What actually of substance have they got? What's their realization of life? They simply grow old and they die. Film star, how long do the female film stars live? Maximum age 32, 33 must be, is it? Then with makeup and everything, they can maybe drag them on till 35. And then that's it. Beauty is gone. And no one cares for them. And then there's someone else, some other beautiful film star. They don't have anything of value. Actually, they're just full of anxiety. The film stars, they're full of, you know that? They're all full of anxiety. That my career, is it going to go on? How popular I am I? They're full of envy of the other film stars. They're always in anxiety. Sada samudvigna. They're always in anxiety. But a devotee of Krishna is in a much better position than the richest person in the world, the most famous, the most beautiful, because they can look at all of that and say, I don't need it. I don't need to spend my life chasing after what someone else has got that I'm trying to get. I don't need that. I'm okay without that. I don't need to make my hairstyle the way someone else thinks it should be. I don't have to dress in a way that someone else thinks that I should dress to be fashionable. I don't have to chase after some career so that everyone can look at me and say I'm successful. I don't need that. I've got Krishna. Satisfied with that. I've got something better. Better than what Bill Gates has got. Better than... Who are all those film stars? Madhuri Dixit and... Who was before? There's Sridevi. Huh? Aishwarya Rai. She's also finished, no? Isn't it? Isn't it? She must be. Almost. She's pulling on with lipstick and makeup. They're pulling on, trying to pretend they're 10 years younger. It's pathetic, actually, isn't it? They're just trying to, everyone's trying to pretend there's something better. Something, trying to pretend that there's something better than they are with makeup and hairstyles and all this, but just to spend their whole life trying to impress other people. Who don't care anyway. Just try to love Krishna, that's all. You'll be satisfied. You don't believe me? Well, you can spend your whole life and see what happens. Just look around you. The whole world's full of frustrated people. Why be like that? Why not try for something better? Why live your life in a way which is already a proved failure? If you see, failure means what you call a success. You know, heart surgeon, success, this, that. That's called a success. Earning a lot of money, big position in a MNC. But they're all these people who are called successes, they're all failures because they don't have any peace of mind. So yes, be a success. But the real success is if you have self-satisfaction. Otherwise, if you have millions of dollars but you can't sleep at night because you're full of anxiety, and you look in the mirror and think, oh, you don't feel satisfied with yourself. Or you look in the mirror and you're looking and you're thinking, I want to be something which I'm not. And you spend your whole life chasing after, trying to be something that you're not. What's the purpose? Trying to be something which you can't be anyway. You're dreaming of becoming as beautiful as Madhuri Dixit used to be. But, you know, you're born with what you get. Not everyone's going to be beautiful. Not everyone's going to be famous and rich. Most people aren't. One devotee was telling me, he's from New York. So in America, one of the popular sports is basketball. So there was some, when he was growing up, there was one kid he was growing up with who just really wanted to be a basketball star. And he would practice all day and he was dreaming of it, but it was impossible because he was short. And to be a basketball star, you have to be tall. There's no basketball stars who are short. It's just not possible. So it was a useless dream, impossible to fulfill. But whatever you are, if you're poor, if you're illiterate, if you're physically handicapped, if you're not materially very intelligent, even if you have all of these drawbacks, you can be in a much better position than a materially successful person. Simply if we understand that I am part and parcel of Krishna, I'm Krishna's servant. Whatever situation I'm in, that's because of my previous karma, and now let me chant Hare Krishna. So, Hare Krishna, that's my suggestion to you. Think, who are you? Where are you going? What is the purpose of life? At the time of death, when you have to look back at your life, will you be content that I spent it in the best possible way? I did the best thing I could. And one thing's for sure, that if you spend your life earning money, drinking beer, going to movies, at the time of death, at the latest at the time of death, you're going to realize I wasted my life. So, Hare Krishna. You can throw the rotten tomatoes now if you like. All right, well, no rotten tomatoes today. You're more polite. Or maybe you find something there. I guess you must be, otherwise you wouldn't be coming here, would you? You're coming to this program because... Why? Why are you coming? I guess because you're feeling there's something worth coming for. Something of value beyond ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitun, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Why are you coming? Who would like to offer? Not from our ex-youth left. He just moved a little bit. Okay. We're all ex-youths. You'll also be an ex-youth soon. Doesn't last long. Okay, why are our present-day youths, why are you coming? What do you find here? Anyone like to offer? Anyone?
Peace of mind.
You find there's some peacefulness here. Yeah, that's a, sorry. I'm sorry, I can't hear because there's kids are doing what kids do, making a noise. To have the joy of good association. That's joyful, isn't it? Yeah. That's real joy. That's the joy you won't get like at the Coca-Cola advertisement. Artificial joy. Anything else? Yeah. To learn more about Krishna and to have clean fun. That's a good one. Clean fun.
To get closer to Krishna.
To get closer to Krishna. That's very good. Very nice. Yeah, it's a fact. Devotees are peaceful in a way which just that you can take drugs. People who are like hyperactive, they can take drugs and it calms the nerves, but it doesn't make you peaceful at heart. One of my friends, a devotee in England, he's not a sannyasi or a monk like me. I mean, he's a family man. So he makes his living by selling art. He has artists who paint pictures and he goes door to door in the rich areas and sells art to people who can afford to buy. You know, they've got so much money they can spend £1,000 on a piece of canvas with some painting on it. So in one place he was selling some pictures and he was dressed in what we would call secular clothing and you would just say normal clothing. So he sold it and this and that, and then the people in the house who had just bought the pictures from him said, "You seem to be very peaceful. How is that?" They noticed. He said, "Well, actually I'm a devotee of Krishna and I do spiritual practices every day and it makes me very peaceful." So even they know, you know, he just came as a salesman, but they could appreciate that he's very peaceful. And actually, I happen to know this because he told me what happened was, he said, "Oh, Krishna, yeah, I know about that. My uncle, he's a member of that. He's in India. It was me." Some relatives of mine who I never even knew existed because I left home so long ago. And unlike Indian families, there's no closeness in Western families. And it's going to come in India, among Indian families soon also. It's the same way of life. There's no closeness. I met my father about 2 years ago in England. I go there once a year and he was telling me about one of my sisters. I see my father about once every 2 or 3 years, something like that. Not that there's no bad feelings or anything, nothing like that, but, you know, he's living in England and I'm not, and we don't see each other much. So he was talking about one of my sisters. He said, "I see you more than I see her." She just, you don't bother. He's like, "Well, you know, what do I need my father for? They have no interest. He's an old man, as you can imagine." So it's like that. There's no feelings, just everyone's on their own. So in Krishna consciousness, we encourage also, although I'm a sannyasi, but we also encourage that the traditional values in Indian life of family life centered around Krishna, this is very good, actually. I mean, the background you have in many ways is very good. In fact, in England, many men, they like to marry girls of Indian background. Not many, but there are quite a few who like to marry girls of Indian background because they think they'll make better wives because the culture is better. So even they recognize that this culture is very good. So modern, in so many ways we can't avoid the modern way of life, but there are many good points of the old culture, so we're stressing this. We have good families in Krishna consciousness. Look after your children nicely. And even materially, that it's much more stable and peaceful and happy to have like a normal family life, rather than, you know, getting divorced six times and having eight children from seven marriages. And that's a bit of an exaggeration, but that's how the most people are. Not, it's not that extreme. Most people in the West, they just go through two or three marriages, not six or seven. But the but like the really like the rock stars, that's what they do. They get married about six, seven, eight times. But is there any happiness in that? No. It's better just to live what we might call a normal life and be peaceful and satisfied with that, rather than and have the happiness of seeing your children grow up and also be good devotees of Krishna. That's much more satisfying than chasing after some impossible dream. Here's a little Mastiwali. Devotee of Krishna. Are you a devotee of Krishna? Good. Here's your other. Tulsi and Tarani Radha. They're also youth, almost. What can you tell me about Krishna? What's Krishna's... Tulsi, tell me, what's Krishna's favorite plant? Tulsi, that's right. Can you tell me any other name of Tulsi? Tulasi is the Sanskrit. Now, that's a difficult question, isn't it? Vrinda, very good. Any other names? Nandini, yeah. Krishna Priya. Very good. It's not just a Mastiwali. All right, that's good. All right. Anyone else like to say anything else? Any questions, comments, doubts, protests? Anything? You like to say something? You don't say much in public, is it? All right. This is the traditional Indian wife. Very quiet in public, but they run the whole show. The men feel like they're in charge, but they know actually who's in charge. The women are more intelligent, actually. Though they have to pretend not to be, but they run the whole show, actually. That's the secret of how to have a happy family life for the women. You let the men be in charge and let them have their say. But actually it's the subtle way by... Anyway, she can tell you. The men know also. If you try to dominate, it doesn't work. But it's actually by affection and service to the husband that they'll just do whatever you like. That's how it works. But if you try to dominate, I'm on top, I'm better than you, it doesn't work. Yeah, you're going to say something? Yeah, we're born with four defects. What are the four defects? Can any of our youth say, did you learn that? Did you teach them that? What are the four defects of every conditioned soul, not only human beings? Why are we imperfect? What is our imperfectness? Who can say? You didn't get that one. Alright. Alright, the first one is that everyone makes mistakes. Who can deny it? Everyone is illusioned. Everyone's in illusion. That covers everything. Everyone has imperfect senses. Imperfect, for instance, you can't see what's on the other side of that wall. The sense of vision only works within a limited sphere. And also, even what we see, we may misunderstand it. An optical illusion. Just like you've seen the picture of the two faces facing each other. If you look at it one way, it looks like two faces. If you look at it another way, it looks like a vase. You know that picture? It's a famous one. So, is it a vase or is it two faces? And the other defect of every conditioned soul is the cheating propensity. We like to pretend that we're something that we're not, or we like to exploit others. So we all have these four defects, yeah. How can we come out of these four? By taking to Krishna consciousness. Well, we may make, what are the four defects? Mistakes, illusion, imperfect senses, and the cheating propensity. Now, we may still make mistakes even after coming to Krishna consciousness. For instance, you may be driving to go somewhere and take a wrong turn. It's not that after taking to Krishna consciousness you can still make that kind of mistake. So that's due to our being tiny living beings. But we don't make the mistake of spoiling our whole life. And actually, if we're in Krishna consciousness, then we do become more alert and more attentive, because we know the value of life. We don't want to waste time in useless things. So we do become, when we say Krishna consciousness, we actually become more conscious, conscientious. There's one word is conscious, and another word is conscientious. Conscientious means applied consciousness. Consciousness means just like a general state of awareness, right? And conscientious means focused, concentrated attention. Being not just dully aware, but alert and aware, and having a sense of what should be done and what should not be done. So, we learn. In Krishna consciousness, we're always learning. Everything we see, we hear, we do. We're always learning because we want to improve our performance, how to live in this world in a better way to please Krishna. So, also in Krishna consciousness, the consequence of our mistake, the consequence of our mistake, that will reflect on our service to Krishna, so we don't want to make mistakes. But if we make some material mistake, we don't get any reaction for that, because our life is offered to Krishna. We're not going to take birth again in this material world. Brahma Pramad, then illusion. Everyone is in illusion, but in Krishna consciousness, we're not in illusion. In non-Krishna consciousness, we're in the illusion of thinking, I belong to this material world. I am part of this world. But in Krishna consciousness, we're not in that illusion. We're thinking, I'm a spirit soul. I'm part and parcel of Krishna. And imperfect senses, that also, as limited beings, it's not that when you take to Krishna consciousness, you're going to see what's on the other side of the wall. So, it's not that by Krishna consciousness we stop being a limited being. But the limitations the limitations of being a limited being, that doesn't stop us from understanding the unlimited Krishna. And the cheating propensity, we come out of that. If one is in Krishna consciousness, then why, there's no, why should you want to exploit anyone? There's no reason to do so. The cheating propensity of always trying to show I'm bigger, I'm better. Instead, a devotee always thinks I'm smaller. Everyone's going? Make sure they get some prasadam. Is it? Is it? Okay, fine. Don't go without prasad. Yeah, then anything?
Morning, you spoke in brief something about attachment and detachment from the materialistic world in the morning session. Can you just elaborate a bit?
Yeah, it's quite a big subject. Attachment. Everyone is attached to this material world. I am attached to the apartment I live in because I think it's my apartment. Someone who is detached, he thinks, well, I don't belong here. I'm only temporarily here. So he's not attached. But a devotee is materially detached but spiritually attached. He thinks that, well, I'm living in this apartment. He's materially detached. He doesn't think it's mine, I belong here. He knows I'm only temporarily here. But at the same time, he thinks that while I'm here, I have to serve Krishna in this apartment, so I should maintain it properly. He's not irresponsible. Again, I was saying this as an example of the knowledge we get by studying Bhagavad Gita. So please study Bhagavad Gita. Then we'll have more understanding of this. Really, it makes a great difference in our lives if we study Bhagavad Gita with Prabhupada's purports and Srimad Bhagavatam. It really adds a dimension, just a completely different and wholly better dimension to our lives. We see things in a different way. It's like you're living in the world. That example is given in Bhagavad Gita. Padma Patram Evambhasa. It's just like a lotus. The lotus leaf grows in the water, but it's above the water. And even if the drop of water drops on it, it won't stay long there. So it's in the water, but at the same time, it's detached from the water. So it's like that. We can live in this world and at the same time identify ourselves fully with Krishna. That doesn't mean we become irresponsible. Rather, devotees, they become in many ways very, because we have to live in this world and serve Krishna, devotees actually become very tuned into the world in many ways. Just like I was saying, I never studied in any university, but I've gone to many universities to lecture there. Or I never earned a living, and you might say, in the normal way. Actually, I did a little bit before I joined this movement. But at the same time, I travel all over the world, which people might think is something which successful people do. So we tuned in to, how to travel around and how to relate with different people in different parts of the world. So we're not, it doesn't mean that by becoming spiritually competent one becomes materially incompetent, but rather one becomes materially competent also, because one sees that the world is, this belongs to Krishna and I have to serve Krishna within this world. Therefore we become materially competent. Yeah, anything else? You have RT. Okay, well, it's great to see you all. That's the kind of thing people usually say, and they don't mean it. They just say it. But actually, I mean it. It's very gratifying to see you all coming and on your Friday vacation, which you could be doing all kinds of different things, but you've chosen to come here. So that's very nice. So we're very satisfied to see that you're coming, and please stick with it and go deeper. Go deeper, and there's no limit to the depth you can go. And the more deep we go into this Krishna consciousness, then the more we find that it's simply blissful and satisfying to the soul in a way which people living the frustrated, stressed out, materialistic way of life, they simply cannot imagine. Just like we're going to sing the arati of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and just visualizing how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the bank of the Ganga is being worshipped by all the demigods and all his devotees, and the beauty of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's soul stirring. Romanch hote hain. Romanch, you know what this word means? Hairs, when we, out of ecstasy, our hair should stand on end. We think of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how beautiful he is, how merciful he is, how kind he is, how he's come among us and all his devotees, how much they love him. So, there's a project. Who wants to do this? Read 12 cantos of Bhagavatam. You have goals in your life, make this one. Make that one of your goals, to read the whole Bhagavatam. It comes in 18 volumes. Most of them are just a little bit smaller than this. So it's not like reading the newspaper, is it? And when you're finished reading the Bhagavatam, you know what you'll do? 12 cantos. You'll go right back to the first canto and start all over again. Because it's so relishable. This book is Krishna in the form of a book. It's the literary avatar. This is Krishna.